Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to today's show with yours truly, Mark Kohler, your co-host, with Matt Sorensen in the house. Give him a shout, Matt.
Oh, yeah.
That
oh,
was
yeah.
Too.
Live. Can you believe it? Live. For reals, live. This is going to be – so we can't edit this. Not that we do many edits anyways, but this is going to be a heck of a good time and maybe some comic relief for some of you guys.
Yeah, and here's the thing. For those that are new and maybe clicked on this open forum, what's it about? You may be thinking, geez, their audio quality sucks. Well, that's because we're doing live internet worldwide radio right now, which is kind of what we did for years until we started to listen to the show on iTunes, and they're like, sound like crap on iTunes, you know. If you listen to anybody else's podcast, and I'm like, well, all right. Do you know most of those people, 98% record it, edit it, make it sound great? So we went to that model for our non-open forum show days. So if you're listening to our show, today's going to be a little scratchier, a little more ghetto, but that's because we're doing it live. We want to take your questions. We're here for you. So it's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to sound like it came out of your ghetto blaster, not out of your nice Walkman, that nice CD Walkman you have. Yeah.
That's right. This could sound more like an 8-track, you know, for you old schoolers out there. So, no, this is good. This is all about building wealth, saving taxes. Grateful to all of you that are on live with us calling in. If you want to call into the show and listen while you're on the road and you have a question, you can call 646-668-8326. If you have a question for the show with us live, once you're on, press the number 1, mute your radio or whatever, and we'll bring you on the show when we can. If you have a question via email, you can reach us at Mark, M-A-R-K, at kkoslawyers.com, or Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com. Send us an email. We've got a lot in the hopper. We're going to tips today, Matt. We're not doing tips. We're going to just throw down, right?
Oh, yeah. We're gonna try and set a show record for the amount of questions because, I don't think we're going to get even close to through the questions we already have. So we're just going to – this is going to be like rapid fire today of questions, which I think will be a lot of content because we want to deliver for you guys that have sent in your questions. We want to hit it. But remember, live callers get priority. So if you want to come on the air, I know some of you are shy, live callers do get priority. So if you want to be certain, just call in.
Yep. And let me say our screener, our marketing director, Shane Thomas, is ill today. He is like death once over. We're hoping he's going to survive. No, don't send flowers. He's okay, but it's just not good. So he's not screening. So talk about ghetto. Matt and I are both bringing on calls live. Over the last 10 years, we've had a couple hecklers that just get on live shows to be an idiot. We hope that doesn't happen today. Please be respectful. Get right to your question. We'll bring you on and ask your name and where you're from, and then share your question quickly, and we'll try and knock it out. For those instances where someone is rude or objectionable, we'll immediately cut them off. But again, this show is uneditable. This is going to go straight on iTunes. If you'd like to catch our prior shows, sign up for our weekly newsletter. Please get to refreshyourwealth.com, refreshyourwealth, just like it sounds, and you can get links to our law firm, our accounting firm, my books, Matt books. We've got a lot of information out there. We want to be your tax and legal resource. So there you go. That's the show. That's what it's about.
Buckle yeah, up. And I just want to give some in-the-news little commentary for everybody today. The Dow Jones hit 20,000. Dow 20,000 has happened. For some
well,
of you,
I thought when Trump got
point,
in, it was going to crash. It wasn't going to crash when Trump got in.
I know. And I don't think you can take credit for it either, though. But it's just the natural progression. I think it went up 0.5% to go over 20,000. So if that's the Trump bump, it's good for 0.5%.
The Trump bump. Well, and we have taken ownership of the term trumpet. So if we say anything objectionable or offensive that offends someone, we've just trumped it. So that's our term. We're owning it. But no, we're as business owners, we are fans. We are excited. Now we know he's not going to be too friendly to potential illegal immigrants, and we've got all sorts of trade deals getting blown up, and we've got environmental issues. I get it. He's trying to build jobs. Let's not make the show political. But the point is, if you're a business owner, there is hope that we're going to see some reduction in taxes, see business growth. So on our show, for that sliver of politics that we are going to talk about, you're going to have to swallow it and deal with it, that we are a little pro-Trump when it comes to business. We hope that many of you that are business owners catch that piece, even though you may have not voted for him for other reasons. That's okay. Hey, he's our president now. Let's try to, look at the bright side.
Boy, you just went in on that. I didn't think you'd wade into those deep waters. I thought those swampy deep waters. I thought we kind of stay out of that, but okay.
But
you just
okay,
it,
right?
I guess. Just go for it.
Well, I
guess.
I don't know.
And thanks for saying we
and
bringing me all into this. Yeah, thanks for saying we.
Well, hey, if I'm going to get a death threat, I want you on one too. So,
we're both going down. Okay.
We're both going down. All right. Well, let's kind of warm up.
Fair enough.
Let's hit a few base hits here. We're going to go with some email questions. We got a couple live callers waiting to come on board, but we got to kind of
we got to do batting practice.
Break
first.
The ice. That's right.
Yeah.
You don't know, folks, how stressful this is because we've got to be smart. Okay, so this is from Ken out in Illinois. He says, love your podcast, especially the Open Forum show. I was hoping you'd be able to respond to an LLC question. He said, I started an LLC with a partner. As we developed our operating agreement, we have used our existing LLC and S-Corp as the members. Love it, Ken. That's the way to rock it when you have a partnership. And you're creating ordinary income, topic for another day. He says, the purpose is to hold rental property. Oh, slow down. Ken, you just major
detour
there. Whoa. Man.
Glad he's asking here.
Yeah, Ken, man, we were on the freeway going 85 miles an hour, and you just, rear-ended someone. Okay. He said, the purpose is to hold rental property. All right. Okay. We do not hold rental property with S-Corps. Now, keep that in mind, folks. I say this humbly, we are tax experts, and we do not want rentals in S-Corps, and you will have 99 out of 100 CPAs and a boring conference room agree with us on that. If you're doing S-Corps with a partnership LLC, you're doing fix and flips and rehabs and wholesales and development. You're not holding rental property. So Ken, got to talk about that. But then he comes to his real question. It came up that if one of our members pass away, how does the LLC continue without the other member? Since death does not end the existence of the LLC, is the estate plan the proper procedure for the heirs to continue as the members and la, 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 is there a way to handle this? Well, let me chime in first here. I'm sure my amazing partner will have something to add. But here's the deal, folks. If you have a partnership and you have an LLC and one of you pass away, that partnership does end. When there's more than a 50% ownership change in an LLC, it's automatically dissolved according to the IRS. There's going to be a tax return done. Now, for estate planning and partnership planning, we like to inject a living trust into the mix, an estate plan into the mix, so the LLC does not fall apart, where the family of the deceased member steps in. And it can run their share, if you will. Better yet, instead of me inheriting Matt's family, which I do not want, I got Matt as a partner. I don't need his family as a partner, all right?
Oh, they're great. They're great. You're going to love them.
So what you want to do in a partnership is you want to have what's called a buy-sell agreement. In a buy-sell agreement, if one partner dies, then you have a mechanism that says, hey, I'm going to buy out your family like that. Maybe you fund it with some life insurance, an automatic note calculation, valuation scenario. This is a wonderful way to protect the business so it doesn't implode, because you've got a family battle and some family in the mix and kids or wife or husband that's sticking their nose in the business. So we call that maybe a golden parachute, a key man policy, a buy-sell agreement. Any of you, in summary, that have a partnership and you hold assets and you're going to be in business for years to come and there's some value there, you want to get with your attorney, talk about a buy-sell agreement, $500 to $1,000 max. It's tidied up. It's included in your estate plan. You're good to go. Bam.
All
Matt,
right.
Anything you want to add?
Yeah. Well, let me just sum this up. Reynolds, S Corp, they don't go together. That is not peanut butter and jelly. That's like peanut butter and turkey, okay? Don't put those
Ooh.
Things together. They don't work, all right? So, and that doesn't matter where the S Corp is. Owning the property, owning your share of the LLC that owns the property, just don't bring it into the mix. Also, love to buy sell. That's the way to handle it. And I will say this on the buy sell. Sometimes you're going to exercise the buy sell. See, the surviving partner in the LLC can say, oh, all right, I'll let your family come in and be half. And maybe if it just owns a rental property or rental real estate, you let the family come in. And you know, you're just still splitting up profits. There's not a lot to do. But if it's more of an operating business, you may exercise that buy-sell that's in your agreement and say, no, I need someone here working with me side by side, and your spouse or your kids aren't going to cut it. So I'm going to exercise the buy-sell and buy you out. And any good LLC operating agreement should have that stuff already built into it, just like the ones at KKOS Lawyers.
Boom. Like that little plug there at the end.
Yeah, nice, see, I worked that in there.
That was
all
sweet.
Right, well,
that
I
was
gotta,
sweet. Yeah.
I got a question here from Josh. Josh
okay.
asks, can you discuss the differences between the general partner, manager, and a limited partner that has 50% ownership? It seems like they could all have the ability to make major decisions in a partnership. Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, Josh,
did you want to cover, like,
Josh,
you know, AIDS or world peace? Gosh, for crying out
yeah.
loud, Josh.
I know. This is true. This is a big topic. I'm going to try and summarize it here, but – now, these are a lot of different terms: general partner, manager, limited partner, someone with 50% or more ownership. And what Josh is trying to get at is the control in the entity. Now, let me separate these two things. First, when he says general partner and limited partner, Josh, what you're referring to is a limited partnership. Okay? In a limited partnership, the general partner has all decision-making ability. Everyone else has no say. Even if 99% of the limited partners say, we should do this, and they all get together. If the general partner says, nah, I'm doing it my way, the general partner is going to control. That's the purpose of a limited partnership. So I don't care what ownership you have in a limited partnership. If you're a limited partnership, the point is you have no say. So in a limited partnership context, it only matters if you're a general partner. Now, in the LLC context, on the other hand, or even in a corporation, but in the LLC, the person who manages the LLC is typically called the manager. A lot of LLCs are going to have provisions in it that says the manager can do this on their own. They may need approval from the members. Sometimes that approval can be majority. Sometimes that approval may be unanimous of the members to do certain acts. So that should be hammered out in the LLC operating agreement. What can the manager do on their own without getting approval of the other members? What is the approval ratio? Does it have to be majority vote of the members' percentages? Does it have to be unanimous? So you can outline those things based on your situation in the LLC operating agreement. That becomes basically the rules of the road for your LLC. It's the rule book, really, of how you're going to operate and how decisions are made between everybody.
I love it. Good answer. I just want to add one caveat. Limited partnerships, like a publicly traded limited partnership, I completely concur with my respected counselor, Matt Sorensen, but in a family limited partnership and sometimes some closely held limited partnerships, you can still build in some safety nets for the limited partnership and the limited partners. For example, they have the right to replace the general partner. They may have the right to vote on major acquisitions or debt or things like that. But this is where a family limited partnership, and I got one sitting on my desk right here, mom and dad may be the general partners and majority limited partners, but you got all these kids involved. And so mom and dad can retain a lot of control through some limited partnership voting. But that's going to be, again, a closely related limited partnership with a carefully crafted partnership agreement. But generally, the LP limited partners have no control. Okay, so we're going to take a live caller. We're going to go to extension 3228. We're going to bring you out here now live. So if you can mute your computer or radio and like to have you out on the show and hear your questions. So welcome. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Sure. Hi, my name is Kyle. I've come from the Bay Area, and I have a question regarding rental properties.
Oh, yeah,
Kyle,
fire away.
That's right up our alley. Woo!
Yeah, exactly. So I own a small cop, no employee, and my wife has a W-2, and we own a single-family house. So recently, we're thinking about maybe getting some rental income by building a granny unit or a second unit attached to our house. Is definitely much cheaper than buying a new rental property in Bay Area. So my question is, if the house is under my name, should I change it to an LLC, or since I'm renting part of my house, and also should I pay for the construction cost by starting an LLC, or can I claim my construction cost as an investment cost? Thank you.
Oh, you bet. Well, thank you, Kyle. I'll take you off the line here, and we'll give that a shot. Great question. And again, live callers get priority, so we've got a lot of email questions we may not get to. We'll do our best. Well, Matt, is it okay if I give it a shot?
Yeah, yeah. I'll play cleanup, happily.
All right. Okay. All right. Now, first of all, Kyle hits a great point. In the Bay Area, buying a rental is like investing in a yacht. You know, it's just not going to cash flow. And I'll tell you, even building onto your home could be expensive. If there's anything in your life you're paying for, folks, and you've never been to the Bay Area, just go there and then multiply it by three, and that's what it's going to cost. Crazy. So first, Kyle, if run the numbers. Make sure that building or adding an apartment to your house is going to make sense financially for you. Always run the numbers on that. Number two, you're going into what we call sometimes the bed and breakfast or mother-in-law apartment quandary, because when you have a rental attached to your primary residence, using an LLC is generally not going to work because you've got to transfer the entire property into the LLC. It's clunky. You've got your home, which is the asset you're trying to protect, attached to the rental. It's all together. So what our general policy is, don't worry about an LLC. Double down on insurance. Make sure that your homeowners, you have a renter's policy, a landlord policy, whatever policy the insurance company wants to call it. Make sure that you've got a really quality double layer of insurance, because if you've got a tenant coming and going in your driveway, your upstairs, your basement, your duplex, whatever it is, your first line of defense is, and primarily your only line of defense is going to be insurance, because an LLC is just not clunky when it's attached. Finally, track all your expenses in the remodel. Absolutely, it's going to be a write-off. I will say this, though. Some clients say, you know what, rather than booking all this and tracking it, I'm just going to collect rent under the table and disregard the write-offs. So I'm going to give up on the write-offs, but I'm also not going to claim the income. I'm just going to run my little mother-in-law apartment under the table. When it's a small type operation, that may work. I'm not encouraging you to commit tax fraud. But the IRS is, by the time you run the numbers, the IRS is going, whoa, this isn't making money for us anyway. But with a duplex, a triplex, or something more substantial, you better put it on the books, depreciate a portion of the home, track all those expenses, and you and your accountant can get together on what to do with that. Matt, anything you want to add on that?
Mm. Okay, Kyle, I just want to give a little tip before you dive down this on the rental. I would just look at the numbers first. I know you're already going down the tax issues, but think of the numbers. How much is this going to cost to build in the Bay Area? Probably expensive. And what's the rents going to be? Maybe the rents are going to be great. But I would also consider, if you're looking to get into the rental real estate market, you may want to just simply look at another market. I live in the Phoenix area. I have rentals here, but I'm not buying more rentals here because they've become overpriced compared to the cash flow you can get on them. So I'm buying in other markets that have better cash flow for price of what you can buy. I'm basically getting a better return on my money. So take that into consideration. Don't think you got to invest in your own backyard. A lot of people in California are doing rental real estate and buying out of California. So don't just think of your own backyard and the mother-in-law apartment. Maybe also take a look at some other markets that are better rental markets you can get in for more affordably.
Love it. Great comment, Matt. And, okay, before we go to another live caller, we'll throw in one quick email question. And since this is from Roxy, I'm taking it. I mean, anybody that's named Roxy and sending me an email, I'm answering it. So,
Is this Roxy who cuts my hair?
It could be. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm impressed you have a hairstylist named Roxy.
I really do. I really do. Roxanne, we're on a – I call her Roxy.
Wow. I'm impressed. Gosh. What you don't know about your partner, I'm surprised. No, I love it. Okay, all right. So here's the question. In fact, Matt, this question is for you, and I know you can dispel of this in short order. She says, I'm assuming it's a female, if your name is Roxy and you're male, it's a whole other topic. Okay, is it possible to sell your house to yourself in order to put it under a self-directed IRA? I'm about to purchase a new primary residence, but would like to rent my existing one. It would be great if I could be earning that positive cash flow under a self-directed IRA. Matt, how do I move my home into an IRA? Is that possible?
Okay, now here's what you want to do. Sell it from yourself to your IRA at the price you bought it for, so you don't have to pay any tax on it. And then sell it from your IRA for a profit, and you don't pay any tax in your IRA. No, that's exactly, unfortunately, what you can't do. And the IRS knew you would do that, and they didn't think that was fair, so they created a whole rule to prevent you from doing stuff like that. It's called the Prohibited Transaction Rule. It's the first rule about self-directed IRAs you got to learn. The basic premise is the IRS, because you have special tax benefits with self-directed IRAs and all IRAs in general, they don't trust you to transact personally and sell your own assets between yourself and your IRA because they think you're going to manipulate the sell price to avoid tax. So we have that rule to restrict this. Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to do it. The self-directed IRA could go buy new rental real estate, absolutely. Totally unrelated to you, maybe even buy your neighbor's house where you're living and rent that. I mean, it's the same thing. That's totally acceptable. So they just don't trust you. And it's not just you, it's everybody. So sorry to say that's not possible. Now, one thing to do, I just have some resources on this. It's a little more complex and we can hit on this, is I do have a free self-directed IRA investor toolkit you can get on my website at sdirahandbook.com. Goes over this rule and the other key things to know before you self-direct your IRA.
Love it. Great comment, Matt. And Roxy, we know that you're not trying to cheat the IRS. You just want to turn it into a rental. It's a great idea. In fact, we did a radio show 2-3 months ago on how to turn your residence into a rental. I would really encourage you to listen to that. And we had a special guest. It's fantastic. It's just the IRA won't be able to be a player in that. And please forgive me for joking about your name. Roxy's just a cool name. We're just going to throw that out. Okay, so I don't want to offend anyone. I don't want to trump it too bad. Okay, so.
Yeah, we got boring names like Mark and Matt. I mean, how our parents weren't very creative with that. But my parents did. I mean, they went with one T on it. They kind of, they got a little wild, so.
That's right. They threw everybody for a loop. Matt with one T.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go back to our live callers. We've got extension 778. We'd like to bring you out. So mute your radio or computer. So welcome to the show. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Mark, it's Jason from San Diego. I spoke with you actually earlier this week about the S Corp, and I'm getting back to you. I promise. I just been swamped. So sorry to bug you again on the show.
No, it's cool. Thanks for listening, man.
Yeah. Firstly, I just want to say you guys are awesome. It's I love your sense of humor, and I've learned a ton by listening to your show. I found you on Entrepreneur and kind of gone from there. But
thanks,
as I mentioned, I'm setting up the S Corp. I'm going to get back to you today, actually. The question that I had is, this year my income was much higher than I expected, and I was a sole proprietor, as I mentioned. I was wondering, I remember hearing on a video that you had about the putting money into a SEF IRA and then doing I screwed up and switch it to the solo 401k. I don't remember the mechanics of that, and I'm wondering if that's something that would make sense for me to do, being that my income was much higher. I'm looking for any deduction that I can take this year.
I love it, and I'm glad you didn't bring up that amazing weather you're enjoying down in San Diego, but we know you're paying for it too, so just enjoy.
Exactly.
Poor Kyle. Poor Kyle on the last call, he's paying out the nose and not getting weather, but he's got great sourdough bread. So he's got to love the wharf down there. Okay, well, I'll take this offline, Jason. Thank you so much. Well, let me throw out, Matt, is okay? Can I give it a shot?
Yeah,
I
love
the word
song,
IRA
yeah.
in it.
No,
okay,
yeah.
Well, Matt's the guru. So let me throw this out. I do have a slide I present at workshops called I Screwed Up and Now I Have to Do a SEP. So, or I did a SEP, what do I do to fix it type of plan. In our opinion, SEPs are terribly old school. They generally don't work. We don't want our clients using the SEP. If you've got an accountant pimping out the SEP, you may want to, move from that accountant to a new, more cutting-edge strategy. So, but if you didn't have the S-Corp or the 401k in place in 2016, the best use of the SEP is kind of like the I screwed up, can I still salvage a deduction, and then graduate. And the SEP works wonderfully for that. So if any of you out there, and Jason, it's a great fit, you could target a certain dollar amount. And of course, if you're only wanting to put $4,000 or $5,000 away, just go with a regular IRA. But if Jason's or any of you are looking for a big write-off, it could be as high as $50,000 or more, depending on your income level. But you're going to generally try to find that $20,000 to $25,000 or $30,000 sweet spot. Put that in a SEP, get a write-off for 2016, fine. But we don't want to go down that rabbit hole again in 2017. So what we would do is set up. Next, so first step, Jason, just go set up a SEP anywhere. I don't care. Set it up at the bank, wherever, because the money's not going to stay there long. Just get the deduction, calculate it, run with it, cash in on it. And then on day two, we want to set up a solo 401k sponsored by your S-Corp so that you can get a much more strategic contribution and deduction in 2017. It'll save you thousands. And then you just roll on day three after the 401k set up, you just roll the SEP into the 401k, and you're now self-directing your 401k, you're off to the races, and you're good to go. So that's the typical structure for the SEP to 401k procedure. It's usually in three or four steps, very simple. And if we're setting up your 401k, you're going to be self-directing it. You're going to be in control, and the administrative cost per year can be really affordable. And you're going to have time with us in the process that will walk you through this whole thing. So, Matt, yeah. Did I do okay? Did I?
I love Jason. Yeah, Jason's first 3 days in office, he is going to have a 401k funded with SEP money from 2016. I love that. It's like on your first day in office, you're going to do this. Let me give a quick – I just want to throw in some quick numbers here that I think helps illustrate this too, is on the SEP rule, you can put in 25% of your income not to exceed $53,000. So, for example, let's say you made $100,000 in 2016, Jason. On the SEP, that means you're going to be able to put $25,000 into the SEP. That's pretty sweet. You're going to get a tax deduction on that. That's saving you money in 2016. And you can do that all the way up until April 15th. Now, that's what you have to do for 2016.
Or when you file your return, actually. Yeah,
if you file an extension,
you can actually – you're good to go.
Absolutely. Now, as Mark said, you set up the 401k. I just want to run through the 401k. On the 401k, you get to do $18,000 plus 25% of what you made. So – now in 2017, when I'm making 2017 contributions in the 401k, if I made the same $100,000 salary out of the 401k, I can now put in $18,000 plus $25,000. It's 25% of $100,000. So now I'm putting in $43,000 basically off of a $100,000 salary. I'm able to do way more, get way more contributions. Plus, as Mark said, you get way more flexibility with the 401k. So that kind of illustrates the contributions a little bit, and I think might help you, Jason, as you're going through those your first 3 days in office on your retirement account.
Yes. Now, here's what's cool further. I'll add another variable. Let's say that Jason says, well, I really only want to put away $25,000. I don't want to put away $43,000. In the first example, in 2016, if Jason makes $100,000, he's going to pay self-employment tax of $15,000. That's why Jason said, Mark, I got to get my S-Corp over to you. Let's get it dialed in. And perfect.
Yeah.
Let's get it going. Because now we're going to do a salary scenario where he may only pay 30 or let's say 40,000 in salary. And so he's saving self-employment tax on $60,000, which would be close to $9,000. So by moving to an S corp, he just saved $9,000. Well, now when we turn the corner and go to this SEP issue, if he says, "Well, I only want to put in $25,000," well, guess what? He can do salary of 40, do 25% of that, which is 10, add it to the 18. So look what he did.
Yeah.
He's putting in $28,000 in his 401k, but only paying self-employment tax of, like, in that example, it'd be about $9,000. So he's saving close to – no, so it's $6,000. So he's saving $9,000 in self-employment tax and being able to put in $28,000. So that's why we say, I screwed up, I did the SEP, now I need the 401k, because you can create self-employment tax savings and put even the same amount or more in your SEP. Anyway, crazy. Fun stuff.
Yeah,
oh,
Jason's in
yeah,
the sweet spot for that. He's the perfect person for that. I love it.
Yeah, and it's hard to stay in my game right now. Some of you have heard, I'm off Rockstars. Rockstar, the sponsor of our show, it's been hard. I mean, I'm gone my 25th day now of no Rockstars, and I was drinking this Dasani or something. It's disgusting. It's like, you know what people are drinking nowadays, Matt? It's called, it's water. It's gross.
Like
have
clear?
You had this? It's, it's
I
miserable.
I know some people cook
you know,
with it, but.
Yeah, I mean, my staff has said, Mark, we really like you off Rockstar because you tend to not lash out irrationally at the staff now. It's been hard to stay focused. Man, I just screwed up that math on the last question, and I don't know.
That's right.
I got
no
it. It's
following
it's tough.
Numbers, anyways. They weren't
yeah,
numbers.
I know. Yeah, the
hey,
staff
okay,
are like
I gotta...
looking at me going, "Oh yeah, go ahead, Matt. Go ahead. I'll just start rambling if not."
Okay, I got a question from Judy here. Judy asks, it's my understanding that an LLC is to make ownership less obvious. I think she's trying to say have some privacy. But should all checks and documents be signed only with the name of the LLC? Is there a situation where my name is in place of the LLC or in addition to it? Also, how can rent or other payments I receive be processed and avoid my personal address? I've been giving people the option of depositing into a local bank deposit in that state or the option of mailing me a check to my personal address. How can I best manage these and keep my identity separate?
Ooh, go ahead, Matt. You filled it.
Yeah. All right, Judy, couple thoughts here. One is keep in mind the best way to structure an LLC is, and for this is for rental real estate, we generally like to have your trust own the LLC, but you're the manager of the LLC. Now, no one has to know that you're the owner or that your trust is the owner. You're simply manager. Now, that means you will be signing typically on checks or documents. So if you're signing a lease or a contract, the LLC is the party, but you're the signer on behalf of the LLC. So you're signing stuff as manager of the LLC, just like the president of the corporation would be signing for the corporation. Now, in terms of your personal – so in some ways, your name is going to be there. People will know at least that you're the manager. They may not know you're the owner, but they'll at least know you're the manager. Now, on the second side of things, though, in terms of addresses, is a few thoughts. One, you could use a P.O. box. You don't need to give them your personal address. And they don't need to know the company address either. Just give them the mailing address. Just use a P.O. box. Use a mailbox, et cetera, or a UPS store mailbox. Use our office. We have even a mail forwarding service in our office for people who want anonymity and don't want their address on their company documents. We have a mail forwarding service, $150 a year. You can have up to 3 entities on it. But you'll still, for like checks and stuff like that, for rental checks, you probably don't want those coming even through to us. I would suggest just doing a P.O. box, likely for rental checks like that, if you want to keep your personal address separate. And so those are just a couple things to keep in mind, because we do want you to have some anonymity with your entities. It's more important for some people rather than others, but if that's important to you, think of just a P.O. box to at least keep your personal address and your personal residence separate from the tenants or people you're dealing with in your business.
Good comments, Matt. All right, I got a question here from Gene. This is a sensitive one, and it was just back on our prior topic, ironically. Gene says, my business partner died in December 2013. Now, I'm going to just say this in advance. This is exactly why, Ken, at the very beginning, we were talking about having an LLC with a buy-sell agreement and provisions that automatically kick in when your partner dies. Because listen to Gene's problem. We had not put any succession planning in our C-Corp or LLC paperwork. She had given her brother 5% shares, 5% of the company, and we each had 45%. So now I still have 45 and he has 50. And he, I don't know where the other five is anyway, but the point is, and he isn't at all, she is, oh, and he, the brother, is not even interested in the business. What can and should I do to get the business back under control? She and I had also loaned each other the contents of our IRAs to get the business rolling. Could be prohibited. And that money is long gone. Her estate is after me to pay back what I borrowed from her, which was $12,000 more than she borrowed from me. I don't know how to report any of these loans and the bad debt. And again, what can or should I do? Well, Gene, this is, I hate to say, this is definitely beyond a radio show type question. And I know you're just calling to go, where should I start? You've got to get a tax law type attorney involved, an estate law type attorney involved right away, and figure out what you can do to offer to settle this business partnership. Maybe you're going to sell, maybe you're going to buy, but you've got to come up with the value of what's there and then put a formal offer together to the family and say, here, buy me out for this, or I'll buy you out for this. And if you present it that way, and it's a double-edged sword, then we go, well, we're not going to sell for that much, but if you're willing to sell, we'll buy you out. So you want to present a number that you're willing to sell for or you're willing to buy, and try to be cooperative. Don't let it turn into a fight. If this goes into court, it's going to get worse. So get an attorney involved. This is something one of our business-type tax attorneys could certainly help you with. And send us an email. But this is a classic example. It's ironic, and this is why this show is so inspired, is that, you know, we see a question 30 minutes ago about Matt, how should I structure my LLC? And then we get this email with, hey, my partner died, and now it's a fight. And it's just, it's funny how the world turns. So, Matt, question.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I got another one here about some rental real estate. Question is, now this has some tax complications to it, Mark, so I'm going to try and dissect this. I currently have a fourplex and a sixplex that I manage through a property management company. I invest in trust deeds where I lend money out through a broker. There are two considerations. I would like to say that my real estate investing is my business, so I'm able to set up a SEP IRA and maybe solo 401k. That's Matt Sorensen ad-libbing in there. Remember back to this last question. This is Steve, by the way, his question, Steve. So I want to say it's a business so I can make retirement plan contributions, but I also want to say that's claim that I'm a real estate professional and get additional tax write-offs. My accountant said I cannot claim my work on my investments as my business, and that I cannot claim to be a real estate professional as I only spend about 12 hours a month on the properties and maybe 8 hours a month on the trust deed investing. As a result, I'm unable to get the additional tax write-offs. Is there any way I can get additional tax savings? All right, Mark. So there's two things going here. He wants to make retirement plan contributions. He also wants to be a real estate professional for the tax write-offs from his fourplex and sixplex.
Well, first, sometimes when clients have a lot of cash flow from their rentals and they want to defer it into a self-directed structure because that's where they ultimately want the money to go, they want to build up that bucket. Sometimes we'll set up a management company to manage your rentals, create ordinary income so that you can backdoor it into a SEP or a 401k. That's another version of the backdoor type IRA scenario where you can get the money from a rental into an IRA. Normally, you just can't set up a SEP or a 401k inside a rental business. You've got to create management income. You better have a lot of cash flow and willing to pass that money into a retirement structure if that's really what you want to do, Steve. So that would be my first comment. Number two, real estate professional classification, three-part test. What's your primary occupation? What do you do is real estate your life every day. If you have another W-2, you're not going to qualify. But if you primarily do real estate, and number two, you do it 750 hours a year, which is about 13 hours a week of doing real estate, you're going to be over the hump. And then the final test is, are you involved in the real estate? You can have property managers, but you have to be involved. And there's a 7-part test there. But it's pretty straightforward on the third issue. If you're married, your spouse could qualify, and both of you are in the running right now, or as a real estate professional. If one spouse qualifies, you both qualify. So those are some initial thoughts. And again, you might not even need to be a real estate professional. Run the numbers. If your income's in the right level, you might be getting the write-offs you need without being a real estate professional. So have us do a tax review or get your accountant in the mix to see what the impact might be if you did claim real estate professional.
Yeah, Steve also noted. Yeah, I love that. Steve also noted, should I get my real estate license and do one real estate purchase per year? Maybe, but again, as Mark said, only if that is your primary work. So if you have another W-2 job or something, that's not going to qualify as your primary occupation or primary line of work. Also, should I fire my property manager and manage the properties by myself? Yes, that could help if you're trying to meet this hour requirement. But again, you can't have some other full-time work. But maybe, as Mark said, you get the spouse in the mix. If you have one, sometimes that works. I've been trying to get my wife. She got a real estate license. I've been trying to get her to be a real estate professional 3 years. So best of luck to you there if that's the scenario you're in.
I love it. Good, good. Great question and answer. Cool topic. All right, we've got a few more questions. We still got 18 to 20 minutes left of the show. I hope that all of you are enjoying this. This is all about, again, trying to provide a tip or a little sometimes it's nice to hear what other people are doing so that you know you're not alone. We're all out there trying to make that American dream for real. Now, we got a caller from Idaho. This is a 208 number, extension 9722. Want to bring you out to the show live. Please tell us your name and what part of Idaho you're in.
Hey, Mark. Long time no talk. You guys went off to do your blog or your podcast, and you haven't done any live shows. So, my name's Al, and I'm in the Boise metro area. So it's been a while since I chatted with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for looping back. We're going to, again, just because the show quality is a little less, but hey, the live feature is really nice. So we hope everybody's patient with that. But we're glad to be live again. A lot more pressure. Alan, what's up? What do you got for us?
So just getting ready to do a real estate deal, and I have an individual who isn't putting any money in but will be participating in it as an effective partner. I'm buying it in my S-Corp. This individual is doesn't hold any shares in the S-Corp or anything. And I want to be able to pay this person at time of sale their piece in the process. They're going to be physically helping with the rehab and some of those kinds of things. Neither one of us are worried. We have a long-standing business relationship. Neither one of us are worried about the other one taking them for a ride. Is there any very simple, very inexpensive way of, can we just write a letter saying this is a joint venture, this is the take? What's your advice?
Well, Matt, do you want to, can I take first stab at it?
Thank you.
All right, so what we would use is, it is simple, but it's not one sheet of paper either. What we would generally recommend in this situation, and we're assuming it's a kind of a rehab fix and flip, not a rental. So you would do, because that's why you're using your S-Corp, perfect. We would use a JV agreement. So you hit the term right, a JV, joint venture, but we would do a JV agreement. That's your simplest option. And that in that JV agreement, we have about a 2-3-page template we give to clients and then fine-tune it, usually within an hour of legal time. You've got it really honed in on your situation. But you want to have some of these bells and whistles, Alan, like how are we going to share profit? What happens if we lose money? What happens if there's a problem? And you really want to have that JV agreement to deal with any, even if you're longtime friends, having a little more substantial agreement is a good idea.
Sure.
There's a little background noise there, so forgive me, Alan. I'm going to answer the rest of this offline. It's just thanks for your patience. Is that but again, I'm not worried about you. You got an S-Corp. You're in control. and you're just going to sign a JV agreement and give this partner their share of the profit at the end of the day and give them a 1099. That's cool. But if I was the partner, I got a lot more concerns. I've got all my only protection is this little 2 to 3 page agreement, which would have to go through court. And number two, you're in complete control of the execution of the deal and selling and all that. And third, this now defaults to a general partnership. So if anything goes wrong on that project, you've got an S corp to protect you. If this guy's name, individual name, is on this JV agreement, I'm going to go after him. I'm not even going to sue you. And this guy's going to be like, "What the heck? I'm not liable for this. Steve was running the deal. Go after him. You signed a JV agreement. That's a GP, baby. That's a general partnership, joint and vicarious liability. I want your house. I want your car. I want your kids. You know, whatever. I don't know if I want the kids. If they're not teenagers, I may be interested. But if they're teenagers, I don't want them. I mean, that's going too far. But,
are they hard workers? Yeah. Are they hard workers?
Yeah, maybe we could put some slave labor together. But anyway, Matt, anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, I love it. Joint venture agreement, that's the path I'd go down. I think that fits nicely, that all this person's doing, putting in some work. You can say what part of the deal they're getting out of it. And I think in the JV agreement, think of these things. Who's doing what? That's what you want to put in there. What responsibilities do each person have? Who's putting in the money? Who's got certain work that they're responsible to do? Also, what authority do people have? If this other person's doing the work, maybe, and you know, maybe they have their contract or they have construction expertise. Do they have authority to make all those decisions? Do you need to both agree on decisions? You want to state that in the joint venture agreement. And then also think about, what if the deal goes wrong? You know, what if this fix and flip turns into a rental? Believe me, we've seen it hundreds of times. You rehab a property and you put it on the market and you can't get what you think out of it, so you end up holding it. Is there a hard money loan in place you're going to need to pay off? Are you going to refinance it? Are you going to turn it into a rental? Are you going to lower the price? Are you going to take a loss? Maybe just think of your exit strategy if you're not able to sell for a profit and get out from under it. So those are just a few things to think about as we'd want to hit as terms in the joint venture agreement.
I like it. Also, we had an email question from Jesus, and he said he lives in Mexico. His partner lives in Mexico, and he lives in Texas. And it's very similar to the last question there by Alan in Boise. And he said, we're going to do a rental property, and it's with a friend. And in that same situation, Jesus, because it's long-term, I would stay away from the JV agreement because it's not a short-term situation. It's going to be a buy and hold, and he's doing his credit, and you're doing cash, whatever. Just stick with an LLC. Just do it. And non-U.S. residents can be members of an LLC to President Trump's chagrin. They can. So if you're on the other side of this big wall, is this turning into a great answer? So if your friend down in Mexico is on the other side of this wall, he can still be a member of an LLC in the U.S. and buy rentals. Isn't that nice? So anyway, I hope I'm not offending Jesus too badly. But there you go. Just set up an LLC.
Yeah, I think the LLC is great. LLC is great. Buy and hold. Just make the distinction that because it's a rental, you're going to have a tax return on that. You're going to split up the loss or the profit coming through the tax return. That's much better to do asset protection for it. Whereas the flip is going to be in the S corp with the JV to the partner because it's short term. You're not going to hold it. So love that. Okay, I got another question here, Mark, from Josh.
Okay.
All right, now Josh says, I'm self-employed international business consultant, and I'm rarely in the U.S. My schedule is widely unpredictable. I'm moving around from place to place. I don't know where I'll be. And subsequently cannot know if I qualify for the IRS foreign earned income exclusion in advance. My residence and tax home is in Washington State. I don't own any property. I have a nagging feeling there's something else I should be doing about my tax strategies, but I don't know what. Can you guys lend some help experience here?
Probably not on the show today. I would say our expert in our office for foreign expatriates, and for those who have never heard that term, if you're a U.S. citizen resident and you're living abroad, out and about, we call those expats or expatriates. And so Rick Taylor is our manager, CPA, with foreign taxation experience for those types of situations. We're not going to do tax returns in other countries, But if you're a U.S. citizen doing work abroad, Rick would be the one to work on your tax return. His billing rate is a third of that as mine. He's highly skilled in this area. He's great. He's just not a partner, I guess, or a lawyer, so it's a little cheaper, and he's wonderful. So call up, make an appointment with Rick, spend a half hour with him, maybe an hour at most, and I know he'll hook you up and provide some guidance on that. That's where I go there.
Mm-hmm.
By the way,
yeah,
Matt,
Josh,
I did get a note.
One...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, on that for Josh just and for people, just in, as a, the kind of the general rule on this is you have to be a bona fide resident of a foreign country for an entire tax year. And the reason it's cool and the reason why Josh is asking this is because you can exclude about $100,000 of foreign earned income. So that's obviously a sweet perk. So, but it is a little tricky, this foreign income tax reporting, and we have to look at also the country you're in terms of what you need to be paying there, and you're going to need to coordinate the countries that you are earning income from. So just do some additional planning. Sorry, we'll get down the rabbit hole on this one. And how many minutes do you have left, Mark? 5, 10?
Yeah, well, I'm going to just bring up – this is the Martian rule because – This is really important because some of you may this shock you. This will just shock you that Matt Damon up on Mars in the movie The Martian, if he would have, you know, some alien would have showed up and bought some of his potatoes that he was growing, he would have had to pay U.S. tax on that. And you're like, what? He's on Mars. How is he paying tax on this little potato farm of his? Hey, Martian shows up, buys his potatoes. Because he's a U.S. citizen, he is taxed on his worldwide, universal, galaxy income. Is that nuts? So as a U.S. So Seth is saying, man, I was living in Washington State. Now I'm in Peru. Why am I getting taxed down here? Well, the U.S. says, hey, if you can show that you live in Peru all year long, we'll exclude 100% of 100,000 of your income and get that foreign income exclusion. But everything over 100, we're going to tax you. So I guess Matt Damon would go for that exclusion. I can't remember the number of days he was stuck on Mars because if he didn't meet the whole year test, he still may have not got the exclusion and paid tax on those potatoes.
But he's a NASA employee. I don't know. I wonder how that works.
It could have violated his employment contract to be selling potatoes on Mars. Anyway,
let's call the IRS and ask them.
Yeah, let's take it to another level. All right, we got another question from Tom. Tom says 1031s. Woo, 1031 question. He says, how long should someone retain a property before entering into a 1031 exchange? I have a property I bought in September 2016. I've used as an Airbnb, but I want to sell this coming summer. Is it too soon? Well, Tom, this is what Matt Sorensen, my partner, is often termed as a gray question. And it's really light gray. Let me say this. It's really light gray the closer you get to 12 months, and it gets progressively dark gray as you get closer to 1 month. Probably black. So,
yeah, that's my gray area scale. Just for all those, you know, when you're in the gray area where there's a scale of gray, you know, there's 50 shades, actually. 50 shades.
50 shades of gray, baby. So I would say, Tom, that as you get, if you're a real estate professional, hard and fast, 12 months. You got to show 12 months of rental income, 12 months of investment use, no personal use, investment rental type income, no rehab crap. I mean, it's got to be renting and really in that system for a year. Now, if Tom says, well, Mark, I'm a W-2 employee at NASA. I'm helping put, you know, Matt Damon on Mars. This is just a little rental on the side. Okay, well, Tom, there you go. Then I'm a little more willing to look at that grayer area of 9 months-ish. If you deal with a really difficult 1031 exchange company, some of them have internal policies that are going to require a year's ownership. I think most CPAs, including the IRS rulings out there, are going to give you some flexibility between that 9 month and 12 month scenario, depending on your facts. So talk to your accountant, see what works.
Yeah. And I just say, Matt, on that hold period, I love that summary, if you're over a year, it's presumptive that you've held this for investment or in a trade or business and you'll be able to do the 1031. If it's under a year, then you're basically on defense. You have to prove that, hey, I bought this for with not the intent to immediately resell it, but I bought it with the intent to hold for business or investment, and it just turned out that I found a different property that was a better investment or whatever. I mean, but you're on defense in that situation. So if you want to be safe, wait a year. If you're prepared to be on defense, talk it out with the CPA attorney that can help advise you on it and give you what shade of gray you're in.
I love it. Well, we're down to our last 5 minutes, Matt. Throw out a quick question. We've got more email questions we could handle. We're out of live callers. I will say this. We've got a restricted number live caller, but I hate to say I don't pick up restricted live callers on our show. We had a really bad experience with that, and you may be just a little grandma with a great little question about your small business on eBay, but I'm sorry. We don't need a heckler, and so I apologize. So if you'd like to call back on an unrestricted number on our next open forum, we'd love to have you. Matt, do you have a question?
Yes, I had a question from Mike here. Says, I'm wondering if I'm able to invest using our traditional Roth and or health savings account in any combination without being personally involved in the investment. Would this violate any prohibited transaction laws? Mike, I love to finish the show on a question like this. The answer is yes. You can combine your traditional, your Roth, your health savings account. Maybe your spouse is traditional in Roth. You can even bring in your kids, set up some Roth IRAs from them. Invest all those funds into one LLC to go out and make an investment. Maybe it's a real estate deal or a startup company or whatever. But you could combine all those sources of funds into one entity that goes out and does a transaction. As long as you set up the LLC properly, each account's going to get ownership based on the dollars that each account puts in, and they're all going to come in the formation and the beginning of the LLC. You can avoid prohibited transaction laws, and have the benefit of bringing all these different pots of money together into one deal. So it's a little complicated more than that, but it's possible. We can certainly walk you through the detail on it in our office.
I love it. Okay, I'm going to field one last question. I also want to give a shout-out to Pansy, a regular listener of ours for years, and she sent over a question. But Pansy, it's a complicated one and very unique to your situation, so I'm going to try to reply via email to you. But Pansy, thanks for listening. We've got another Mike here with a question, and I'm just going to wrap it up on this one. He says, how do we this is a good one. Everybody listen in. He says, how do we handle IRS reporting, K-1s, for our child's LLC that are now under a Wyoming parent LLC as of December 2016, not 12/31. Now, for 2017 and beyond, is there any IRS reporting required for the children's LLCs? Do we summarize all LLCs and report on a parent K-1? Are there any tax advantages to having a Wyoming LLC? We may need a consult soon. Yes, you do, Mike. This is now, why I wanted to field this question is, please, our listeners, if you have children, getting a K-1, that's a very unique, unique situation, Mike. That's not something we encourage our clients to do unless they're worth $50 million and we're trying to push some sort of business asset or income into that child's tax world. A lot of times it's going to be considered kiddie taxable income. It's going to be taxed at your rates anyway because it's unearned income. Be really careful. Now, we love kids on payroll. I love to give 1099s to kids over age 18 going to college. I want to shift income into my kids' tax return as much as possible, but not through a K-1. And for some of you out there, they're like, what the crap is this K-1 and Mark's talking about? That's kind of a partnership return. It's a partnership entity, this LLC. Be careful there. That's point number one. Point number two, we do love Wyoming. It's a great state for asset protection, maybe some serious privacy strategies and holding assets, but I'm not too anxious to consider a Wyoming LLC for any sort of tax purpose. It's all about asset protection and privacy. So if someone's selling you a Wyoming LLC and putting kids on with K-1s and promising tax benefits, Mike, we got to talk. That'd be one I'd be worried about. Matt, you have some final words for our listeners here before we sign off. Anything important? Yes.
Oh, yes. Very important public service announcement. I want to encourage you all to go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. We've had some awesome 5-star reviews here. I'm just going to read a couple. This is one of the best, awesome podcasts, priceless. I'm amazed at how Matt and Mark make this subject that is so dry, law and accounting, and make it enjoyable in an informative radio show. Look forward to listening and podcasts coming up. Thanks, Ophir, for that 5-star review. Please give us those on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. We will see you next week.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Ophir, for that 5-star. And everyone, keep living the American dream. Woo!
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.